Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, December 10th, 2021. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me again with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So the holiday shopping season has shifted into high gear, Andrew, and the most recent numbers on book sales signal the publishing business is headed for a whopper of a finish to a very strong sales year.
Yes, indeed. So we've been watching the numbers and reporting on them on the Publishers Weekly site, as usual, and you can read our reporting there. But the numbers, as you say, have been very strong. We know there's a few blips here and there and a few notable spikes, but we can start with the most recent report from the Association of American Publishers and from the AAP's monthly Statshop program, which has figures for the month of October. And their October report, the AAP's October report, was scorching. Every category posted sales increases over October 2020, with total revenue up an incredible 23.1% over 2020, which, of course, we should remind people was a strong month. 2020 was a very good sales year. Now, we should point out that there, of course, is the annual rite of fall, right? Back to school, which had a huge impact on K-12 instructional materials, which were up, and this is not a mistake, they were up 91.9% for the month of October 2021 over 2020. While sales in the higher educational materials segment were up 42.8%. Now, again, revenues in the fall always go up for educational materials, but with back to school, and I mean like real back to school post-pandemic, people in classes, we are seeing massive gains. And those gains reflect sort of an overall rebounding in spending on physical actual materials for a sector of the industry that really has been hammered by the pandemic.
So back to school wasn't just good news for parents then, Andrew. It was good news for publishers too. Trade sales also turned in a solid October, yes?
For sure. The trade categories had really solid gains in the month, with adult book sales up 17.2% over October 2020. And again, I'll say it again, October 2020 was a very strong month and a very strong year. Sales in the children's and YA categories were also up 13.7%. And overall, with November and December still out there, the last 2 months of the holiday season, adult book sales are up 13.9% for the first 10 months of the year. And children's and YA sales are up 14.6%. And, you know, if I sound like I'm stammering a little bit here, it's because that's just a stunning turnaround when we're talking about, you know, sales being up another 14% over sales that were up 11% in 2020. So, you know, we're looking at a 25% increase since 2019, something that I think no one would have seen coming, at least not in the early days of the pandemic when we had store closures and worker shortages and people were working from home. But here we are.
NPD BookScan stats for late November also look promising.
That's correct. You know, despite concerns over supply chain issues, publishers and booksellers are apparently doing an excellent job. Sales of print books were up almost 10% for the week ended November 27, 2021, over the similar week in 2020. This, as you say, according to NPD BookScan. And more good news, the growth was paced by adult fiction and three new adult fiction titles in particular, which led to a 35.3% increase in unit sales for that week in the fiction category. Print unit sales have jumped 39.1% in the YA fiction category. You know, that's a huge jump for the week, but there's a couple of big names here that are fueling that. There's Brandon Sanderson, whose newly released Cytonic sold almost 21,000 copies. And of course, you've got Jeff Kinney, whose latest book, Big Shot, continued to head the juvenile fiction list. That sold more than 88,000 copies. And next week, we will see just what effect the new Dave Pilkey has. His new Cat Kid Comic Club book has just dropped. So it's going to be a very happy holiday season for young readers as well as for publishers, including some young readers in my household who gave the new Kinney and Pilkey books solid reviews.
Also this week, PW peeks at what's to come in 2022 with the semi-annual adult announcements issue.
That's right. So always among, you know, one of our most popular issues, we do two of these every year. We do spring and fall announcements. The spring 22 announcements are now out. They run down hundreds of books in 15 categories, all set to be published between February and August of next year. So yeah, the publishing industry's idea of spring pulls in a little bit of winter and a little bit of summer. So I'm not going to run down the whole list there. I just want to point listeners to the PW site where they can check out the spring announcements. And I'll once again offer praise for my colleagues on the review side of the book here for just another tremendous issue.
We've spoken in recent programs, Andrew, about a wave of book banning in public libraries and schools across the United States. This week, the National Coalition Against Censorship got on board, issuing a statement of concern.
Yeah, so the National Coalition Against Censorship released a statement this week with more than 600 signatories, including some 50 bookstores. There were almost 20 publishers and 450 individual stakeholders. These included the ACLU, there was Penguin Random House, Simon & Schuster, Macmillan, Scholastic, the American Library Association signed onto the statement, as did PEN America and the Authors Guild. And basically, the statement decried what we've been talking about on this show in recent weeks, and that is that we're seeing a huge rise in book banning at schools and libraries. Now, our listeners will no doubt recall that the statement comes after a dramatic rise in challenge books, and in particular, challenges to books on issues of race and the LGBTQ experience. But these are not your ordinary book challenges. You know, I reported on this in November. You know, this current surge is clearly part of what everybody, I think, now sees as an organized political strategy, alongside things like, you know, calls to ban the teaching of so-called critical race theory. And all of this seems to be undertaken with the aim of sowing conflict and activating voters in communities across the nation. John Kraska, who's the executive director of Every Library, told me in an interview that what we're seeing here is the weaponization of parental control to advance a political agenda. And one thing that I'll say that the National Coalition Against Censorship statement calls out, and rightfully so, is that, you know, the well-established processes and policies that are in place to deal with one-off legitimate book challenges raised by parents and concerned citizens, that those policies are being repeatedly ignored or violated, as books are often being pulled preemptively while they're being reviewed amid this latest wave of challenges. So I'll say this, it's good to see more groups, and especially this large group, standing up to this wave of book banning. In fact, I should also point out that Simon & Schuster CEO Jonathan Karp also expressed concern over the rise in book banning in a statement that was issued just before Thanksgiving. And in that statement, Karp noted that the list of Simon & Schuster titles facing bans or challenges has grown 46% in recent months. And he added that these kinds of actions will leave us, and I'll quote him here, poorer as a society, as well as posing, again, I'll quote him here, an existential threat to the livelihood of our authors and our ability to publish free from censorious attack. So strong words there. But, you know, I have to point out, and we spoke about this weeks ago when we first reported on the issue, that we're kind of past the strong statement stage, right? And I think we are. I think it's important to have the support that we have through these statements, but we have to have a couple other things too. And the first is that in some ways, these statements can kind of backfire in the sense that political forces who are using book bans as sort of a cudgel in a political strategy are kind of happy to have this war of words, right? Because it draws media attention and it helps their fundraising. So that's something to be wary of. The statements alone are not going to get the job done. And the second thing I point out is that all of us who support the freedom to read, knowing that statements of support are just not going to do the job, have to follow up these statements with more concrete actions, right? And I hear librarians and freedom to read advocates tell me this, write some checks, support some candidates, right? And local candidates at that. And more importantly, show up at your school board meetings, right? Have your voice heard. Show up at your local library board meetings. In fact, while you're at it, maybe run for local office in your hometown if this is an issue that concerns you. You know, we really can't do much about, you know, the sort of broader culture war headlines. You know, those are what they are in the national media. But I think the way that we can kind of put an end or at least slow down this kind of book banning effort is by being truly engaged at the local level. I think that's what it's going to take.
And throughout this year, Andrew, you've reported on library ebook laws, the first of which passed in Maryland. The legislation seeks to ensure public libraries can license ebooks that are available to consumers. On our next program, you'll tell us about a similar bill that has just passed in New York, and late-breaking news is in that AAP has sued the state of Maryland over the issue. Tell us what's going on.
Big news there indeed on the AAP suit, and I'll get to that in a moment. But that's right. So we've talked about the Maryland book. They became the first state to enact library ebook legislation with its bill passing the Maryland General Assembly unanimously, I might add, on March 10th. And that bill is now set to go into effect in January of 2022. And then, of course, New York followed suit in June with a similar law that, as of press time, and this is sort of an update here, has still not been sent to the governor for signature. Now, that could happen at any moment, even while we're recording. But here's the thing, the New York law is facing some opposition, right? The AP, its lobbying efforts to assert that the law runs afoul of the Constitution have gained a little bit of traction, and it seems to be being held up. But here's the thing, the bill must be sent to the governor by the end of the calendar year, this under New York state law. Governor Kathy Hochul then would have 10 days to sign or veto the bill. Now, if the legislature was not in session, the governor would have 30 days to consider the bill. But the legislature is technically in session. Even though lawmakers are not there, they haven't been gaveled out. And if she didn't sign it in the 30-day period, if the legislature was gaveled out, then the bill would die, right? It would be it's what's essentially known as a pocket veto. And here's the point. I know I'm getting to it in a roundabout way, but because the legislature is still technically in session, Hochul has 10 days rather than 30. And if she doesn't sign the bill, rather than a pocket veto, it actually becomes law. So this is what I've been told by New York parliamentarians. And I hope that's clear for everyone. As if that's not hard enough to follow, there's more developments. And that, of course, is, as you say, the Association of American Publishers has now filed suit in Maryland to block implementation of the law. And this is not entirely unexpected. Okay. I think we thought when the AAP was raising its issues with the constitutionality of the bill that this is where it would end up. So in their lawsuit, the AAP basically writes that the Maryland Act is going to bring considerable coercive powers of the state of Maryland to force publishers to disseminate their digital literary works to Maryland libraries on a, quote, unlimited basis on terms dictated by the state of Maryland, which I'm not sure that's an accurate read of the law, but that's what the lawsuit says. And they say that the law was passed in, quote, flagrant violation of the authority granted to publishers by federal copyright law. So we're going to have a lot more to say about this in the coming weeks. Next week, we'll have our top 10 library stories of the year. This will feature prominently in that discussion. And also, I will have had a chance to talk to more people and digest the filings a little bit more. So stay tuned. I'm sure we'll have a lot to say on this latest development on next week's show.
All right, then. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer. Thanks for joining me on the program today.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, in the final weeks of the year, CCC's podcast series looks back at the past 12 months. In 2021, book publishing sought renewal and recovery following the previous pandemic year. The return to normal was fitful as variants Delta and Omicron crashed party after party, and COVID-19 played hide-and-seek around the world. Likewise, science played hide-and-seek with fake news. The new European Digital Media Observatory is fighting digital disinformation with facts and research, says Secretary General Paula Gori.
Research is really key to understand, to go back to the agents, who they are and how they act. What has been seen so far is that when official actors are involved, the impact is greater, of course, because it is backed with more funding and sophisticated tools. Thanks to online platforms, we all know we have access to a variety of news as well as to a larger number of views, but we also know that they have changed the way that our citizens access and engage with the news. And this is also a place where the disinformation can be spread at an incredible scale, speed, and precision. And on top of that, let's not forget that emotions are the main driver for sharing. Think of, for example, of fear in case of disinformation on vaccines, or anger and frustration in case of political extremism. So as it was really, I think, easily but powerfully said in a 2007 report by Claire Warder and Hossein Derashkan, without amplification, disinformation goes nowhere.
2021, the year in review, coming on the next CCC podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.